Please begin.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pacific Basin 2015 annual results presentation. We will have a presentation first, and then we will have a Q&A session afterward. May I now pass to our Chairman, Mr. David Turnbull. David Turnbull, please.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for attending Pacific Basin's 2015 annual results presentation, which this year takes the form of a joint conference call and live webcast from our HQ here in Hong Kong. I'm joined on my right by our CEO, Mats Berglund, my left by our CFO, Andrew Broomhead, and on my far right, our CTO, Charlie Coccella. 2015 was a horrid year for dry bulk shipping, which has naturally impacted our results. However, we made a much smaller loss than in the previous year and an increased positive EBITDA. Our performance is in line with our profit warning announced on the 26th of November 2015, highlighting Pacific Basin's resilience in this weak market and the value of our robust business model. I will hand over to Mats, who will present our results and business activities before Andrew talks you through the financials. I will then invite you to ask any questions you may have. Thank you. Mats?
Thank you, David. Good afternoon, and thank you for your interest in Pacific Basin. Turning to slide two, we improved our EBITDA to a positive $88 million in 2015. We halved our underlying loss to $28 million, and we significantly reduced our net loss to $18.5 million. This represents a strong outperformance in one of the weakest dry bulk markets on record. We turned around our Supramax segment to positive contribution by focusing on key routes, growing our global parceling activity, and significantly reducing our chartering costs. We generated positive results from our much-reduced towage business, and our exit from Ro-Ro was fully finalized. We intensified our efforts to reduce all categories of costs. Without compromising safety and customer service, we reduced our daily vessel operating expenses through scale benefits and good cost control. Despite growing our own fleet, we reduced our overall G&A expenses by $19 million, or 25% compared to 2014, and we continue to work hard on further cost savings and efficiency. We are redelivering all expiring medium and long-term chartered-in ships to further reduce our charter costs, while our growing high-quality owned fleet enables greater control and service quality. Slide three. Our Handysize and Supramax daily TCE earnings of $7,870 and $9,170 per day outperformed the Handysize and Supramax spot market indexes by over $2,500 per day, or 54% and 39% respectively. Going forward, we have continued to secure fixtures and cargo contracts that combine with our existing cargo systems to support continued premium vessel earnings. As at February 18, we had covered 44% of our Handysize days for 2015 at $7,800 per day and 59% of our Supramax days at $7,330 per day. On our business model, slide four, we are, of course, not happy with the state of the dry bulk market, but we like the structure of our company today and the focus on our Handysize and Supramax segments. In the Capesize and Panamax segments, operators primarily carry iron ore and coal in one direction, and they go empty back. They often have a small number of large customers, are heavily dependent on Chinese imports, and find it very difficult to differentiate themselves. Our segments, on the other hand, are much more diverse and operationally intense, and having skilled people and operational expertise really makes a difference. Our ships have their own cranes and can carry a wide variety of minor bulk cargoes. A much smaller proportion of minor bulk demand comes from China, and we are very focused on our segments, we have 400 customers and a very global geographical exposure, carrying more than 25 different minor bulk commodities. Our business model has been built up and refined over many years, and we now have a better fleet of high-quality, substitutable ships than we have ever had. Our people know how to find front haul and back backhaul cargoes and develop systems of complementary trades through spot and long-term cargo contracts. And they know how to schedule and combine our fleet of substitutable ships with our cargo system to achieve a high laden-to-ballast ratio. You can't execute this business model from one office, and our global office network with people on the ground close to our customers is a critical ingredient to win and operate key cargoes. This is how we maximize our vessel utilization, and it is how we generate our TCE premium, which represents a significant earnings advantage when multiplied across our large fleet. Our average Handysize TCE premium of $2,760 per day in 2015 exceeded our five-year average premium of $2,650 per day, and our average Supramax TCE premium of $2,550 per day in 2015 exceeded our five-year average premium of $1,780 per day. Turning to our balance sheet on slide 5, our cash position at December 31 was $358 million. And in addition, we had another $101 million of liquidity with $375 million of committed but undrawn credit facilities, exceeding the remaining $274 million two-year CapEx commitments on the 13 Japanese newbuildings that are not yet delivered. We also have $14 million US arriving in early 2016 for towage assets sold but not yet delivered and paid for at year end. The sale of non-dry bulk assets contributed to reduced net gearing based on our book values from 40% to 35%. In the first half of 2015, we issued a new US$125 million convertible bond maturing in 2021. Our completed exit from RoRo and most of our towage business generated cash of $140 million, which we collected in 2015. These actions were taken earlier last year, preparing for the anticipated payment of $230 million of convertible bonds in 2016. Slide 6. While global fleet growth has continued to slow down as expected, the market saw negative demand-side surprises the last 2 years. Most notably, the effects of the unprocessed minerals export ban from Indonesia in 2014 and a larger-than-expected reduction in China's coal imports in 2015. This has led to a bearish sentiment, with freight rates and second-hand values falling to historically low levels. This market weakness was compounded in the second half of 2014 and through 2015 by significantly lower fuel prices, which support increased ship operating speeds when freight rates increase. Strong South American grain exports led to market tightness and increased freight rates in the third quarter of 2015. The fleet responded with higher speeds, thus increasing effective shipping supply, which contributed to freight rates weakening again, and rates have been falling since September last year. Spot freight rates have increased since Chinese New Year, but levels remain below industry cash operating costs, a situation not sustainable in the long term. And I remind you that we are talking about market freight rates here and not Pacific Basin earnings. Turning to slide 7, vessel values. Clarkson Plato now value a benchmark second-hand Handysize at $9.5 million, which is down 34% since a year ago. They rate a new building at $20.5 million, down 7%. While there have been some forced sales, activity has been very limited, and it is increasingly difficult to establish fair market values. The gap between second-hand and new building ship values is at an historic high, discouraging new ship ordering. Slide 8. Dry bulk demand was substantially flat in 2015. This reflects positive demand growth for bauxite, steel products and grain, but offset primarily by reduced coal trade and reduced nickel that has still not fully recovered from the Indonesian export ban. Overall, we saw the two major bulks, iron ore and coal, combined contract 1%, while minor bulks increased 1%. Note that this is measured in volume. If we measure demand in ton miles, overall demand actually contracted by about 0.8%, while minor bulk growth was slightly larger at between 2 and 3% measured in ton miles. Slide 9, focusing on the Chinese dry bulk imports. They represent about 30% of total demand, and they reduced by 2%. The reduction is explained almost exclusively by significantly lower coal imports due to slower economic growth, increasing use of hydroelectric power, and actions to protect China's domestic coal industry. The two major bulk commodities combined contracted 5%, while the minor bulk commodities increased with 2%. Many of the minor bulk commodities, including soybean and bauxite, show good growth. In fact, minor bulk imports into China have grown steadily every month since March 2015. We believe that minor bulks and grain are better positioned for continued demand growth, both worldwide and into China. Minor bulks tend to peak later in the economic cycle, driven also by consumer products. Urbanization and changing eating habits continue, and China does not have enough water and land to grow enough crop for animal feed, and we believe grain imports will continue to grow. Also positive for our ships and our business is China's export of steel, which grew 33%. We realize there are a lot of numbers on these two slides, but we wanted to show you that world commodity trade has not stopped, and minor bulk demand is growing both worldwide and into China, albeit at a lower rate than in previous years. Slide 10, turning to the supply side. The low spot market freight rates and negative sentiment is driving increased scrapping, as well as cancellations and postponements of new buildings and very little new ordering. The much reduced new ship ordering is further increasing pressure on mainly Chinese shipyards to exit the still overcrowded shipbuilding sector. These positive supply side reactions to the challenging market will lead to a stronger supply-demand balance and thus a healthier market in time. About 9% of the world's dry bulk fleet is more than 20 years old, and 18% of the fleet is more than 15 years old. At today's weak spot market rate, owners of ships of this age and ships of poor design and build will consider scrapping and lay up to stop negative cash flow. This is evidenced by the high level of scrapping seen so far in 2016, which, if continued or increased, points to a potential shrinkage of the fleet in the full year 2016. Slide 11. We show here Clarkson Plato's yearly demand and supply levels combined in one chart. They estimate dry bulk shipping demand in 2015 measured in ton miles to have contracted by 0.8% year on year, representing the first reduction in demand since 2009 and only the second drop since Clarkson Plato's data records began in 1991. The overall dry bulk fleet grew 2.4% net, representing the smallest growth since 2003, which is significantly less than the 5 to 6% net fleet growth expectations of a year ago. The global fleet of handy-sized ships grew a similar 2.6% net during the year, with net ship deliveries of about 8.5%, partly offset by scrapping of about 6%. We also show here Clarkson Plato's forecast predicting a recovery in demand over the coming years. Clarkson estimates a modest net fleet growth, but, as already mentioned, year-to-date scrapping points to a possible shrinkage of the global fleet in the full year 2016, and in our view, we do not see the fleet growing in 2017. I will revert with a wrap-up, but now hand you over to Andrew, who will present the financials. Andrew.
Thank you very much, Matt, and good afternoon. So turning to slide 12, the 2015 financial highlight. The group reported an underlying loss of $27.8 million in view of an extraordinarily weak dry bulk market. The result was helped by a $6.2 million profit from our significantly contracted towage operation, comprising $1.6 million from existing operations and $4.6 million from the final OMSA activities. The loss attributable to shareholders of $18.5 million was reduced by $8.8 million of non-cash mark-to-market income, mainly on our bunker swaps used to hedge our fuel exposure on forward cargo cover. This reverses part of the mark-to-market bunker losses recorded at the 31st of December 2014. However, this figure did reduce from an income of $16.5 million at the interim 2015, hence impacting our results negatively in the second half of the year. Our EBITDA was $87.7 million, increasing by 7% over last year. Slide 13, analysing our dry bulk results. Our handy-sized revenue days decreased 8% 8%, whilst our Supramax revenue days increased 4%. The weak dry bulk market brought down our Handysize TCE earnings by 16% to $7,870 per day, which outperformed the market by 54%. Blended daily cost improved by 9%, and the result was a negative Handysize contribution. However, the Supramax contribution turned to a positive $22.6 million. This is mainly a result of a change in the strategy to concentrate on key trades with a tighter geographical focus compared to last year, resulting in better matching of cargoes and ships. In addition, our Supramax fleet's large proportion of cheap, short-term inward charter ships and the expiry of higher-cost charters reduced our Supramax blended daily costs, bringing them to a level of just $206 per day above our Handysize costs, despite Supramaxes being much larger vessels. Turning to slide 14, daily vessel costs for Handysize. Handysize blended operating costs of $7,930 per day decreased 9% compared to 2014, mainly due to the lower daily charter hire costs for short-term and index-linked vessels. Our owned vessel costs were maintained at below $8,500 per day, with a proportion of owned to chartered vessel days increasing to 47%. The breakout graph on the right shows the different chartered daily cost split between short-term, long-term and indexed charters. We continue to make use of short-term and index-linked vessels, which are able to make a good contribution to our service and our results even in the weak market. Slide 15 is the equivalent one for the Supramax segment, where blended operating costs of $1,190 per day decreased 26% compared to 2014, on the back of a 31% decrease in chartered-in vessel rates down to $8,090 per day. This decrease was due to cheaper short-term inward chartered vessels. Our owned vessel OPEX decreased a significant 7% due to reduced repair and maintenance costs and increased procurement efficiencies by our technical management team across the Handysize and Supramax fleet, and reflecting the quality of our vessels. Slide 16, the balance sheet. Our owned fleet includes 69 delivered Handysize vessels with an average hook value of $16.2 million and an average age of 8.4 years, and 16 delivered Supramax vessels with an average book value of $22.7 million and an average age of 6.4 years. Our vessel carrying values do not have any accounting impairments at the year end. These carrying values are above reference second-hand vessel distress sale prices, but as you are aware, the accounting impairment calculations reflect the expected net present value of the vessel's employment throughout its useful life. In PB's case, a component of the valuation is represented by our business model's ability over the long term to produce TCE numbers that are above market rate. At the end of December, cash and deposits stood at $358 million, with a net borrowings position of $568 million, giving a net gearing of 35%, reduced from 40% at the end of last year's, and the group was in compliance with all loan covenants. We maintain as a KPI that net gearing should remain below 50%. Slide 17, borrowings and CapEx. We have $274 million of CapEx commitments spread over the coming 2 years. These will be funded by our undrawn $375 million banking facilities. This year, we'll see the maturity of the $106 million 2016 CB in April and the expected put in October of the $124 million 2018 CB. With cash on the balance sheet from fundraising in 2015, we have planned for these repayments. Turning to slide 18, cash flow. The group generated operating cash flows of $99 million for the year, and in addition received $140 million of cash proceeds from the towage and ro-ro sales. CapEx of $146 million during the year included vessel payments for 5 Handysize and 1 Supramax delivered during the year, and installments for another 4 Handysize and 1 Supramax new buildings. Our net decrease in borrowings of $59 million mainly represents loan repayments and maturities of $79 million, and buying back at a discount some of the 2016 maturing CB with a face value of $104 million. This is offset by the issue of the new 6-foot 4-year, $125 million CB with a maturity in 2021. The overall result was our cash balances stood at $308 million at the year end. And now I'd like to hand back to Matt.
Thank you, Andrew. Slide 19. To wrap up, current market rates are below industry operating cash costs, which is unsustainable. The situation is leading to increased scrapping, a shortfall in scheduled new buildings, and very little new ship ordering, which will contribute to a healthier market in time. Minor market demand is growing, and low commodity prices, freight rates, and fuel costs are also stimulating demand. This is not the end of dry bulk transportation for all time. The shipping markets have a track record of overreacting in both directions. Current sentiment is very weak, and the timing of a recovery is difficult to predict and is usually triggered by unexpected market factors. Meanwhile, we are managing our business for a continued weak market in the medium term and are prioritizing safety and staying power. While obviously not satisfied with our absolute financial results and the state of the dry bulk market overall, we are satisfied with a refocus on our strong Handysize and Supramax dry bulk business, the structure and organization of the company, and our performance relative to the market. Substantially all of our assets are now invested in our core world-leading Handy dry bulk business, where we have a strong platform and a competitive edge. And we believe that our segments and exposure to minor bulk are better off from both a demand and supply standpoint than larger vessel sizes with a larger tonnage surplus and heavy exposure to Chinese iron ore and coal. Our business model is consistently delivering an earnings premium over market. Our staff have great depth and experience managing a large portfolio of cargo contracts and direct relationships with more than 400 customers from 12 offices around the world. We have a larger owned high-quality fleet of predominantly Japanese-built ships with superior reliability, longevity, value retention, and fuel efficiency designed and equipped to fit our trades for the long term. It's a better fleet than we have ever had. Our Hong Kong listing, transparent reporting, and strong liquidity position means Pacific Basin is a preferred counterparty for our customers to do business with, and we are working hard to make the most of this. Our cash position, TCE earnings, operating costs, and G&A per day stand up well against the market and our peers. We remain well positioned to navigate this weak market and to benefit from a cyclical upturn when it comes. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll now hand you back to David for questions.
Thank you very much, Matt. How is the format?
Thank you. Thank you, Matt and David. We will now open questions. Open for questions. You can ask the questions through online or by the call. Please state your name and organization before your questions. We will now answer the questions by the call first. Operators, please.
Thank you. We now begin our question and answer section. If you have a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad and you will enter a queue. After you are announced, please ask your question. If you find that your question has been answered before it's your turn to speak, please press 02 to cancel the questions. So once again, 01 on your telephone keypad now to ask a question.
We do have some questions online, I believe, which if there are no verbal questions, we can go to you.
Yeah, we can go for the online first. First question is asked by Karim Pan from JP Morgan. When do you expect the industry drivers to turn more positive, and if so, in which trades? Second question is, do you see increased counterparty risk, and if so, how do you plan to mitigate this? And three, do you have any plans to defer your new building vessels deliveries or dispose any existing fleet? Thank you.
Can you bring it up? It's not there. Yeah, that's it.
Shall I go, Dave? Yes, please. So, first question, when do we expect things to get better, right? So it's extremely difficult to pinpoint when, but we think rates at these levels are not sustainable, as we mentioned, and scrapping is picking up. You know, spot rates are down to $3,000 per day levels, and cash operating costs for most players are around $5,000 per day. So there's a lot of things happening, including delaying and postponing of new building deliveries. So we think the driver for an upturn will need to be scrapping, and we are seeing it, right? So year-to-date, scrapping levels are indicating, we estimate, scrapping to exceed deliveries this year with a shrinking fleet as a result. Second question was, you keep it still there?
Yes, so it's actually put it up again. Yeah, it was okay just now.
Increased counterparty risks, if we see that and how we plan to mitigate. So we are an operator, and we do not time charter out our ships to other ship owners. I would be more worried about counterparty risk if I chartered my ships to ship owners. We charter our ships to the shippers, to the end users, many of whom we know very well. And unlike in tankers, in dry bulk, the freight is paid upfront. So touch wood, we have been spared from significant customer losses, and we expect to be able to continue doing so. We do watch things, obviously, very closely, though. Third question is if we have any plans to defer our new building vessel deliveries or dispose some existing vessels. We have pushed two of our new building vessels a bit by way of mutual agreement between ourselves and the yard. But it's worth repeating what Andrew mentioned, that we have pool financing in place for the vessels, so we're not necessarily increasing our cash by pushing deliveries. We pay the equity in these new buildings already and have full financing for the remaining CapEx commitments on the Japanese new buildings. We do not intend selling any vessels because it's the worst time possible to sell vessels.
Here's another question from C.W. Mu from CITIC. There's two questions. First, can you name your largest lenders and how much loans outstanding to each of these entities? Second, you mentioned in the earnings report that your lenders describe certain minimum level for the market value of the mortgaged vessel, loan LTV 1. What is the minimum level required by the lenders? And two, where does the metric stand for the company as of December 31st and as of today?
Andrew.
Thank you. So with the new build deliveries that we have and are taking delivery of, the most important lender for us at the current time is JBIC from Japan. The other lenders that we have are basically a selection of European and Asian ship finance banks. Somewhat invidious to go through the list, but these are established ship finance banks. In terms of the lenders, the minimum level for the LTV, typically in the loan finance documentation, LTV values are prescribed between 100 to 120% of the outstanding loan. As we mentioned in the slides presentation, we are in compliance with all our loan covenants at the year end. And if you look at the detail of the balance sheet, you'll see there is no restricted cash in relation to any of the mortgages which we have at the current time. So in other words, the value of the loans is in compliance with the amount of loan outstanding compared to the fair market value. The tests for the LTV are done periodically throughout the year, so the next stage of the review will be during the course of the middle of the year. So the position at that time will be a function of where market values have got to, balanced against the payments below.
Thank you. There's another question from Yan Liu from Deutsche Bank. One, is there any flexibility in your CapEx commitment? That is, can you delay the scheduled vessel deliveries in order to preserve cash? Two, the second vessel value remains under pressure. What's your senior lender's attitudes regarding the loan-to-asset value requirements? What's the current loan-to-value requirement? What's the current loan-to-asset value requirement, and is it possible to renegotiate it?
Okay, perhaps the first question. That's your answer.
Yeah, I think we already answered it. Really, there's, you know, we have pushed to new building commitments a bit, but again, the effect is not necessarily to preserve cash, right? Since we have pool financing in place for the remaining capital commitments on the new buildings.
Second question.
I think the second question. question builds on the answer to the earlier question. I think it's fair to say that shipping is a deeply cyclical industry, and we borrow from ship finance banks that understand the nature of that cyclicality. And throughout the years in which we've been borrowing, we maintain an active dialogue with the banks to ensure that we can talk about the state of the market, and we can be, as a company, well positioned to be able to participate in the market. So those discussions, as I say, have been going on all the time that we are a listed company, and they will continue to go on, but we don't tend to comment on specific situations at any one point in time.
Another question. The undrawn banking facilities dropped from 150 million in June 2015 to 60 million December 2015. Was some of the banking facilities withdrawn, or company has drawn down some since?
Yes, we've drawn down the facilities. We put on those facilities when we acquired the second-hand vessels that we purchased during 2013. But in terms of managing the overall liabilities of the company, we didn't draw those loans down immediately. They remained undrawn facilities. So the reason for the drop is that we have subsequently drawn those down.
Another question from BlackRock. Can I ask whether the company will need to provide additional cash collateral for the ships, bearing in mind their drop in value?
Andrew again.
Well, and it comes down to the discussions that the banks will have with a whole range of shipping borrowers at this stage of the cycle. The fair market values of ships are particularly hard to ascertain at the moment. Ship valuations really become an art and not a science. So in that discussion, the use of perhaps a generic indicated market value doesn't really give a guide as to what a specific ship value is. And using a single distress vessel valuation to value a loan portfolio or a fleet portfolio for a working set of assets in a company, again, is not particularly relevant. So this will be subject to discussions for a whole range of shipping companies. And perhaps it's useful in looking at the fact that the accounting standards reflect this when they assess whether or not there's an impairment on companies' assets. And as we have commented, there is no impairment on the assets in our balance sheet at the 31st of December. In the accounting standards, look to the net present value of the expected cash flows from those vessels in their working operation.
We have one question from the call. Operator, please.
The next question is John Eshaisha from UniCredit. John, please go ahead for your questions.
Sorry, I was on mute. I would like to ask the management, from the results, it appears that they are deriving a lot more value from the Supramax exposure rather than the Handysize exposure. And I wanted to ask them if they were going to take advantage of this low market to reduce Handysize exposure and increase Supramax exposure, and if not, why?
I think if I understood your question correctly, it was we have derived more benefit from Supramax than we have from Handysize, and are we planning to increase our Supramax exposure? Is that how you want it?
Yes,
thanks.
Correct.
So, thank you. So the Supramax segment have been doing great this year, and we turn it around to a profitable contribution, much thanks to focusing on key routes, primarily in the Atlantic, but also much thanks to our growing steel parceling business run primarily out of Hong Kong here, with Chinese steel exports growing a lot. You will know if you study our vessel days, etc., that our Supramax book consists more of short-term chartered in ships and index chartered in ships. And with the weak market that we have had in 2015, we've been able to substantially reduce our charter in costs and make a margin against our cargoes and our contracts. Our handy size segment remains super strong, and as you can see, the outperformance relative to the index is even stronger on handy size. But the handy size fleet consists of more owned and long-term chartered ships relative to Supermax, and you need to keep that in mind when you assess the performance of the Supramax. But we're very happy with the Supramax turnaround, and we've been taking great advantage of our market intelligence, and our skilled people have done a great job at making a margin even in this weak market.
Our next question is Raymond Yap from CIMB.
Hi, everyone. Just a quick question for me. Is there minimum liquidity covenants on your ship borrowings? That's all. Thanks.
The covenants that we have on our loan facilities, the most important one relates to the loan-to-value, which is we've talked about on the call already. In terms of minimum cap, then that is consistent with working capital needs of the company. Different companies have different amounts of that, and I think you can see the sort of ranges that have been renegotiated in some cases by some public companies.
There's a question from Value Partners. Could you elaborate more on your plan for the two upcoming new CBs?
We can. I think the simple answer is we are simply going to repay them when they come due. But Andrew, anything more to say to that?
That sums it up.
No, we will repay them as they fall due or are put to us, yeah.
There's another question from Karen Chan. Any change in dividend policy as no dividend declared for full year 15? Second, what is the total tonnage transported by Pacific Basin in full year 2015? Since market demand for minor bulk increased 2% in full year 15, just want to know if PB lost market share. Third, in the result announcement, it said we reduced our own tonnage size and supermax operating cost to $4,210 and $4,060 per day, but the presentation show 8,460 and 8,490 respectively. Why a difference?
On the first question, we do have a dividend policy, which is to pay 50% of our profits. However, in the last couple of years, we have paid a little bit extra dividend, but in this year, we decided that we would not. However, there is no change in our dividend policy, and as when we get back to profitability, we will maintain that policy. Question number two, I'm sure who's on to that.
How many tons did we move? 55 million tons for last year.
And then on operating costs.
Yeah, it's the mix-up there is, you know, the lower numbers are our owned vessel operating costs. So that's for the owned ships. That's for repair and maintenance and insurance, etc. While the higher numbers are our total costs, including other things than only OPEX.
I mean, we have done a lot of work on our cost, operating costs. I mean, Charlie, anything you want to...
Well, I think our costs are competitive in the market. We benchmark them regularly, and it proves to us that they remain competitive. As Matt has pointed out, the numbers in the 4,210 and 4,060 represent the technical operating costs of our vessels. Well, the higher numbers, I think they are slide 14 and 15, include depreciation, finance, and other components.
Correct.
Another question from Vessel Capital Management. Can you address how you anticipate meeting the cash needs for new bills and bond maturities this year, including the 2018 bonds, which has a put option this year? And what is the minimum cash balance you need to manage your business? Would you also consider issuing a new convertible bonds to meet the upcoming convertible maturities?
Okay, a part of these questions have been answered, I think, by Andrew, but perhaps you'd like to...
Sure, no, just to help clarify, because it's an important subject. We have cash at the end of December, $358 million. We have undrawn facilities that we can draw upon and will draw upon for the new builds. That's $375 million. The CapEx commitment under the new builds is $274 million. So, you know, those are cash balances that we have or will have. In addition to that, as Matt's mentioned in his part of the presentation, we have $14 million of cash coming in from the sale of some of the towage assets that were completed but not paid for. So the new buildings will be funded out of effectively the JBIC facilities in full. The convertible bonds will be funded out of the existing cash that we have within the operations. New convertible bonds, I mean, we have used the convertible bond markets over the years relatively frequently. The timing for issuing of bonds is not something we would comment on specifically, but clearly the appetite of the market, both geographically for investors, for the nature of the industry, you know, all of that needs to be taken into account.
We have a question for Joanita Rose. Do you have any debt covenants based on net debt to EBITDA or interest coverage? What What are your options in case you will be asked to reduce your debt, assuming the Fitch rate stays depressed?
The short answer, the answer is we do not have covenants based on net debt to EBITDA or interest coverage. Out of interest, you will note from the details of the presentation that our interest cover increased to 2.2 times last year compared to 1.9 the year before.
Thank you.
Yes, and a question from Terence Wong. First, how will Pep Basin fund the potential deal 2018 CB put, which will likely happen in October? Second, as the deal 2021 CBs are trading at a price way below par, is Pep Basin looking to buy back some of its deal 2021 CBs?
On question number one, we'll fund it out of cash resources. On question two, it's a matter that we will look at in due course, but we have no plan, or in fact, we really have no comment on how we will tackle that matter.
A question from Oscar Chow. Question is regarding the 101 million committed and undrawn debt facilities. Do you have any restriction in use of proceeds? Can you draw this down to repay CDs? Is this unsecured?
These are secured loans, so they're secured on vessels, and as such, there's no restriction on the use of proceeds. So yes, it can be used to repay CBs, if one wants to look at it like that.
A question from New Rock Way. What is your equivalent EBITDA adjusting for lease operating expenses for December 2015? What do you estimate would be the capitalized amount of operating leases?
Well, yeah, this is quite a complex question, and it obviously goes to the new accounting standards, which in 2019 will require the capitalization of leases. Clearly, the lease assets or the lease vessels that we have will have changed at that period of time. The finance leases that we had on our balance sheet have now, those vessels have now been pushed, passed back to the owners. The purchase options were not exercised on those. In terms of our how we think of chartered in vessels, we see these vessels as assets which over their lease period are able to generate a positive contribution to our operating performance as opposed to a liability on the balance sheet. So we don't have specific numbers that we think would be useful at this point in time.
A question from Captain Lee. How many new ships will be launched in 2016?
That's
surely there's 13 to come, but they're spread between 16 and
17. There's 5 to go this year.
5 to go this year.
Okay. 5 this year.
A question from Ronald Gern. What was the rationale behind your charter-in onerous contract provision decision done in 2014? Given the current much lower rates against committed 2017 to 19 charter-in rates, are you still comfortable with the provision assumptions made at the time?
Yeah, I mean, the impairment is primarily against the long-term charters that we have, and you know, one has to make assumptions for long-term rates, and we do not see a significant change in these assumptions now compared to a year ago. Andrew, do you have anything to add?
We took cautious assumptions a year ago, which was the route to having to make that onerous contract provision at that point in time. Clearly, the market is no better than it was at, than a year ago. When looking at the quantum of onerous contracts provisions potential, then we have to look at not just individual charters, but we look at the group of chartered-in vessels that we operate. And clearly, the company has benefited from the reduced cost of short-term chartered-in vessels.
And maybe just to add that, again, we do have a track record of outperforming market rates, right? So we do take our premium into account when we make those assessments.
It's a follow-up question from Karen Chen. Follow to the cost of Handymax and Supermax, what is the cash cost level for them respectively? One should have a feel for the EBITDA for 2016 compared to 2015.
Hey Andrew, we'll check the cash cost. We have it in the report there, but you know, we're obviously not going to make a forecast for EBITDA for 16. We have given you the covered rate that we have as of, you know, about a week ago, being 7.8 per day on the handy sizes and 7.3 a day on the supermaxes.
So the cash cost for the Handysize vessels was $6,570 per day, and for the Supramax fleet was $7,720 per day. It is given in the results announcement under the analysis of daily vessel costs.
Note that that's the historical average for 2015, though, right? So it's not a forecast. The actual cost is much affected by the short-term charters in and the index ships that we use, right? So the forward cost is pretty significantly influenced by what the market is doing.
A question from Paul. What are the shipping rates or TCE assumed in your NPV computation of vessels?
I think we're in a position to disclose that because it would in effect be giving a forecast, right? So we cannot disclose that, unfortunately.
Another question from CW Moo. From the materials you have provided today, vessel CapEx is $171 million for 2016 and $103 million for 2017. You also mentioned you plan to draw down loans of $171 million for 2016 and $140 million for 2017. Why is there a difference of $37 million of loan against CapEx number for 2017?
Okay. Comes down to the payment timing for a vessel. So having ordered the vessels, the equity element of the CapEx is paid first. Then once the vessel's deliver, then we draw down the loans. So what you've correctly picked up there is the fact it's really just timing differences over calendar year ends, but it reflects the back-end drawn down of loans in relation to the original vessel cost as opposed to funding the installment amounts. So effectively, we can draw down from where we are today more than the actual CapEx that is outstanding.
Question from Vincent. Do you anticipate low ST short-term and spot rates continuing the rest of the year? When might it change and how will it affect your chartering strategy going forward?
So we have said that we are planning for a continued weak market in the medium term, and hence we are redelivering all long and medium term charters and are instead taking advantage of the real low rates to charter in ships and make a margin even in a weak market. That, I think, is as much as we can say, right? But we do believe that rates have come down to such a low level. Basically, all the vessel sizes came down to 2.5 a day in the spot market. Again, not our rates. And that is really driving actions, scrapping. And we are of the view, and this ties into the previous question on NPV, etc., that this is not sustainable. Nobody will order a new ship until rates come up to a reasonable return on that new ship. And second-hand values are so low that will prevent new building, and it will really drive scrapping. If you have a 20 or 22-year-old ship today and you're going to put it into dry dock and you're exposed to $2,000-$3,000 per day spot rates, you're not going to do that. And this will go on until the market self-corrects and things get tighter again. How long that will take is very difficult to pinpoint, right? But we've tried to emphasize and give you a lot of facts here on the demand side. It's not a total collapse of demand. Demand for minor bulk is still increasing, although at lower levels. The fleet is not really growing anymore, but we need to get scrapping until we get a tightness to come back in the market. And we believe that everything is in place to have that happen now.
If we are running out of time, we will take last two from the online and last two from the call. This one is from Lisa. But first, for the undrawn bank facility, $64 million unrelated to new build financing, it is secured loan. So does this mean you need to post some mortgage vessel to draw down the loan? Second, can you disclose, as of now, do you still have no cash? Given the drop in second-hand vessel value, do you think the company will be required to post cash collateral when banks review the collateral value sometimes in the middle of the year?
The 64 million unrelated to new build financing, which is correct. Those facilities relate to mortgages put on the second-hand vessels that we purchased during 2013-14 and took delivery at that period of time, but we had not drawn down at that stage. So there's no additional security which needs to be put on at the current time. In terms of pledged cash, I think the first point to note is a general point that under the loan-to-value covenant, it's not a requirement to pledge cash. It's to pledge collateral. So it could be vessels or it could be other assets. It doesn't have to be cash. And I think, as I commented earlier, these are discussions that are held with banks at points in time. The values, during the middle of the year when we have those discussions, will very much be a function of where the agreed value level is for the specific ships of Pacific Basin and compared to the loans at that point in time, and those loans are amortized over time.
The last one from online. Do you expect any seasonal pickup in fish rate post-Chinese New Year? How important is the oil price in terms of overall supply?
Yeah, we have seen a pickup after Chinese New Year, but rates are still at very low levels. How important is the oil price for overall supply? It is important. It has the effect of pushing speeds up when freight rates increase. And we gave the example of the third quarter last year. Not too long time ago, we actually had tightness in the market and rates were $10,000 a day. But fleets responded with higher speeds, which took the price down again. So we would benefit from a higher oil price. But barring that, we need scrapping to continue, and we're seeing that happen now.
We'll go back to the call. Operator, please.
Next question is Ting Tang from Daiwa Capital.
Hi, good evening, guys. Thanks for being so patient. Just want to confirm the $64 million you mentioned, that's the in relation to secured facilities where the collateral has already been posted. So it's immediately drawable. So I just want to confirm, I mean, last June, in terms of drawn and undrawn facilities, it's about $675 million. As of December 2015, it's about $660 million. So it hasn't really sort of moved that much, even though the second-hand values have dropped considerably more in second half of last year compared to the first half. So I guess I'm just trying to understand what drives the banks in terms of asking collateral, in addition to sort of second-hand trading prices. I mean, do you have to sort of, show sort of cash flow forecasts? And can you just sort of give us an idea, I guess, of the process that you normally sit down with your banks to talk about collateral top-ups?
To help you understand, I mean, the key difference between June and now is that there have been loan repayments. So that obviously changes the test, the loan-to-value test, if the loan has amortized. In terms of what drives the discussion, again, to re-emphasize, it's about what is the appropriate value for the specific vessels. There's a lot of comments at the moment in relation to generic value of specific ships. To be honest, today in this market, they are generally driven by distressed or quasi-distressed type situations. And in working out the valuation of specific vessels in a working fleet, that isn't necessarily the best guide to valuations. So, these are the levels of discussions which would take place and consistently throughout the shipping cycle do take place, which again I emphasize, which is why people generally try to work with ship finance banks which have an understanding of that cyclicality.
Okay. And just a follow-up to that question, if banks do ask for collateral, what's the, firstly, what's the backup plan in, providing that collateral given your cash plus undrawn is sufficient for, the existing loan repayments plus the CBs due and puttable this year? So there doesn't seem like a lot of flex. So firstly, what's the backup plan? And secondly, how much notice period do you get in terms of, supplying that additional collateral?
I think, as we have mentioned during the call, we have a number of assets other than cash which can be used. You've seen that we have monetized the value of some of the tugs, so we have $14 million of cash which is coming in the first half of the year. Max has commented that we have some unsold tug assets, and those are items which, you know, at some point, you know, well, they are assets, and at some point will become cash if we sell those assets. We have a limited amount of unpledged vessels, so there is always flexibility in the nature of those discussions. In terms of the timings, again, I emphasise that discussions with banks, there's nothing new about the stage of the market at the moment as to whether one is discussing with a bank. So that's an active dialogue. The nature of the discussions, I think, between banks and shipping companies will come down to how good the relationship is between those two parties.
Okay, thank you guys.
Next question is, and this is last question is from Meg Xu from DQS. Please go ahead.
Hi guys. Just I guess you may have already just touched on it on the last question. You talked about the two unsecured ships. Could you give us like some idea of what type of ship that is and why it was not included in the last refinancing?
One was one of the vessels which you may remember. We announced that we fourth quarter, October last year, we acquired a second-hand vessel. So that was acquired after the vessels had the loan facilities had been put in place. And we also have one other unmortgaged vessel. We just have not chosen to put that under a facility when we were putting those original loans in place.
Are they Handy size or Supramax?
Yes, they are. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which one? Sorry. Are they
Handy vessels? Yes, Handy size.
Okay, Handy. Okay. And just in answering one of the questions earlier, you mentioned that if I understand correctly, that the next discussion you have with your banks is in the middle of this year. Is that what I understand?
Yes, I mean, again, I will emphasize that discussions with banks take place continually. There's nothing special about any one particular point in time. But yes, we talk to the banks and we will continue talking with the banks.
And my last question is with regards to your towage business. I know you've been divesting some assets there, but maybe you could run through like what is your future plans for the remaining Middle East tugs and the two Aussie barges.
Yeah, there's nothing left in Australia. That's all sold, and part of the $14 million that's coming in.
Okay.
So all the remaining towage assets are in the Middle East. There's about $22 million left of book value there after the $14 million is paid. The Middle East is doing a great job employing these ships, and we are marginally profitable there, as we have mentioned sometimes before. We would, consider selling those assets, but the market is pretty tough with the shaky oil price. So the Middle East, tug and barge market is affected by that. But if you have interest, you can give me a call.
Yeah, I might need a few of those. Yeah, thanks.
Okay. Well, thank you all for joining. Clearly, the team will concentrate very much on running the companies as well as we can, securing good contracts, securing the best rates we can in a very difficult market, and reducing our costs where we can and keeping our costs ultra competitive. That is our job. Clearly, we have an unexpectedly, I suppose, poor market, perhaps the worst in living memory. Certainly the worst since records began. We are well positioned. We're strong with a good management team, and we will continue to fight these battles. As Matt said in his opening comments, one day things will turn, and when it does, we'll be good and ready. So thank you all very much for joining us, and we look forward to talking in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's the end of our conference call. Thank you.